Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
To Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. As always, please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. That's VitalityCapsules.com. And of course, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. And this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. And it is July 2nd, Tuesday. And today's topic is, could medical intervention be the cause of relationship blues? Now, I actually put that very mildly, but it's pretty likely that medical intervention might be the cause of quite a few relationship breakups, especially committed relationships. So in the United States, there's a 50% divorce rate. Now, this is often attributed to poor family values, a decline of the culture, lack of commitment. However, 80% of those who break up or get divorced cite financial issues as the reason for the breakup. And since medical bills are the cause of 78% of bankruptcies, this translates to 63% chance that medical bills are in the mix or literally at the bottom of marital discord / divorce. So tonight, I'd like to clarify the greater-than-expected role that medical intervention may play in destabilizing relationships on an emotional, financial, and therapeutic level. So there's lots of reasons and lots of ways that medical therapy actually destabilizes the bond between two people who really care about each other. So I'd like to share a little bit about my background. Like most doctors, I entered medical school at the age of 22. Never having had a long-term relationship. A blank slate, you'd say, ready to believe the pronouncements of experts. And I believe the people who were teaching me in medical school, I believe they were experts. So the first thing we learned in medical school was that men were evil. They brought misery to their understanding and long-suffering wives. And, of course, the women's lib movement was at its height back then. This is the 80s, early 80s. And men were vilified. So all women would be better off, of course, without their partner. Although, of course, nobody should get divorced. Very confusing, but I got it. Blame the guy, especially in the area of OBGYN, because there, guys were always portrayed as the ones who gave women infections, never the other way around. Guys always fail to understand the wife. And further, the interest of patients in their relationships was misplaced. Any partner not in total agreement with the doctor's recommendations was not a caring partner. If they cared, why, they would help their partner obey. So this was a litmus test for caring, was obedience to the doctor. And we were taught that our life-saving therapies or needed medical care could not be deferred or delayed due to relationship considerations. So as a young doctor in medical practice, I was quick to advise that a woman should simply walk away. Well, this notion was put to the test my first year in private practice. A woman came in complaining about her husband, and I advised, of course, well, get rid of him. And she did. Oh, my God. She was absolutely miserable. So was he. Finally, thank God, they got back together, and they were very happy. I learned a lesson from that, that divorce is not always the answer, and to look in other directions for a solution. So let's take a look in other directions. The first place to look is drugs. And as you know, I like to look in the PDR, not the free ones they mail to every doctor's office every year. Nope. This is the real one that lists diseases that are caused by drugs. So if you look up a particular disease, in this case we're going to say impotence or erectile dysfunction. And if you look this up, this very interesting book, useful book, gives a list of all the drugs that create that condition. And these drugs are real, these are real diseases these drugs cause, because these are diseases based on diseases reported to the FDA after the drug is released. So this is nothing imaginary or theoretical about it. So I'm going to spell out a few of these names people have asked in the past. They like these names spelled out so they can tell if they are taking any of these. So these are some drugs that cause impotence, and it's really shocking how many of them are just prescribed casually for conditions that are not life-threatening, for conditions that a person doesn't have. And so let's get started. So Attapex-P, it's a Centramine, it's a weight loss drug. And so who wants to lose weight? Well, some lady who wants to be, well, you know, attractive. She's concerned about her sexual life, personal life. And so obviously taking this weight loss drug is going to, if it's a male we're talking about, he's going to be impotent. If it's a female, she's going to lose her sexual desire. Then we have Atacan HCT, which is a blood pressure medication. And so blood pressure or hypertension is something that's frequently treated with medicine. And what does it do? It just makes this poor guy impotent and interferes with his relationship. Now, what's the benefit of treating hypertension? Well, we treat hypertension to prevent deadly heart attacks and stroke. What we don't tell patients, though, is in order to prevent one deadly heart attack, they would have to take their high blood pressure medicine as instructed for approximately 480 years. Not exactly an emergency. Then there's Advocor. This is a combination of niacin and lovastatin. What does that mean? That means this is for lowering cholesterol. Again, not exactly an emergency. If you take your cholesterol medicine just as your doctor tells you, it will take 1,250 years of use on average before one deadly heart attack is prevented. Then we have Ambien. This is a sleeping pill, and this gets rid of your sexual desire. Just don't even worry about it. You'll fall in love with your sleep, and your partner will be a memory. So this is Ambien. Now, Ambien is a sleeping pill, as I mentioned before. It was introduced as, best thing since sliced bread and non-addictive. We now realize it's very addictive, responsible for quite a few deaths. And now we realize it causes impotence and helps weaken relationships. Then we have an antidepressant called Aplenizin. That's Aplenzin. And then there's Avodart. Avodart. Now, this treats benign prostatic hypertrophy. In other words, it treats a harmless condition. And so to treat a harmless condition, we're going to destroy this poor guy's personal life. Then we have Axid, AXID. This treats reflux and indigestion. So if someone burps, like, oh, my God, take this Axid. And it'll help with your indigestion. And in exchange, what do they get? No sex life. Then there's Azilect, A-Z-I-L-E-C-T. This is a Parkinson's disease medication. So remember Parkinson's disease. So Parkinson's disease medication is going to create, this is one of them, is going to create impotence. And then Betaseron, a drug for multiple sclerosis and melanoma. Important thing to understand about melanoma is the criteria for diagnosing malignant melanoma has changed. And now 90% of people diagnosed with malignant melanoma do not have a condition that would shorten their lifetime, their lifespan. So for a condition that's 90% harmless, they're going to take a drug that's going to cause impotence. And then here's a shocker, betamol ophthalmic. That's B-E-T-I-M-O-L. Ophthalmic means for the eyes. This is a beta blocker, and it's a treatment for glaucoma. And one drop of this stuff, one drop, causes impotence. That is a lot of power. So one drop in the eyeball, boom. And then there's bicillin. This is our favorite. Bicillin is penicillin, and it's injectable. And this is a shot they give you when you get sexually transmitted diseases, but guess what? It wipes out your sex drive. It's also used for a few other things, but it's famous for that. Now, Campral is a drug that gets rid of a person's desire to drink alcohol. That sounds good, but it makes you understand why this that country song comes from, where he says, you know, you ain't no fun since I stopped drinking. Well, if he used Campral to stop drinking, it means his sex drive went out the window right along with the alcohol. And then we have captopril. Captopril, and I'll just go list, these are hypertensive drugs that cause impotence, which means basically wipes out a man's ability to be intimate with his partner. And if a woman takes these, it could actually wipe out her interest in sex as well. So things like captopril, cardizem, these are all blood pressure medicines, catapress, Coreg, Cozar, Diavon, Diazide, Dynacirc, D-Y-N-A-C-I-R-C, X-Forge, which is a combination blood pressure pill, though, Hyzar, Inopran, it's I-N-N-O-P-R-A-N, it's a new water pill they have out. So these are just blood pressure medicines that wipe out a person's desire or even interest in sex. And in many relationships, one person losing interest in sex can be, that plus a few bills can really wipe out the relationship. And you take into account the cost of these medicines and the cost of the doctor visits, many of you might say, oh, you know, we have insurance. Then you toss in the cost of insurance. A lot of people would be a lot more in love if they didn't have to pay health insurance premiums. And so another one is Celexa. Now, Celexa is an antidepressant. And, again, another class of drugs that is absolutely notorious for wiping out sex drive. So let's go through the list of antidepressants. So that would be Celexa and Effexor. Go down our little list here. And we have other psychiatric drugs that cause impotence, like Lexapro, for example. Lyrica is a pain medicine that helps with fibromyalgia that causes impotence and loss of sex drive. And then Taxol, which is an antidepressant, also causes impotence. Now, this one is huge, 10%. So 10% of people who take it can be expected to just be impotent or not interested in sex. And the same with Prozac. So this person comes to the doctor already depressed. Doctor says, no problem, I can help with that depression. Take this medicine, and boom, now he's got real troubles. He's depressed and impotent. And for most individuals, that's not a good combination. And then Wellbutrin, another antidepressant, also causes impotence. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete, and that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. So there's also another drug, Eligard, E-L-I-G-A-R-D. And this is curious because it treats prostate cancer in men, making them impotent, and fibroid tumors in women, making them uninterested in sex. Now, how's that for a relationship? And Equetro, E-Q-U-E-T-R-O, treats seizures. Evozac, that's Evo-X-A-C, treats dry mouth and Sjogren's syndrome, which is autoimmune disease. And Exelon treats mild Alzheimer's, and that's associated with Parkinson's disease. And these things keep people from having intimacy in their relationship. And Fanapt, it's a drug for schizophrenia, does the same. Seizure medications like Gabatril and Geodon cause impotence. Klonopin, another seizure medicine, which is also being used for panic attacks, anxiety, and bipolar, very similar to Valium, causes impotence. And Lamictal, another seizure drug, also causes impotence. Now, the list is very long. I guess what I could do is just put it up on the website and post it for you. But the point here is when you go to the doctor, even though it's an 89% chance whatever you recommend is not going to be helpful, there is an excellent chance, better than even, that you're going to get one of these drugs for a common condition, such as depression, indigestion, hypertension, glaucoma, Parkinson's disease, cholesterol, that's going to really throw a wrench in your personal life. Now, what about routine medical care? So let's walk through what happens. You walk into a doctor's office, or even better yet, the wife says to the husband, you need a checkup. You have got to get a medical exam. And he says, yes, dear, I will do this. And so in this relationship then, he's equating caring for his wife with being obedient to his wife. So he's going to go to the doctor and get a checkup. Annual exam, let's call it. So what's he going to recommend? Middle-aged guy? Well, probably tell him to take an aspirin a day, right? Take an aspirin a day and help with, reducing heart attack and stroke. Sounds good. But what's going to happen? He's going to take his aspirin a day, and he's going to get indigestion. He's going to call up his doctor and say, hey, I have indigestion. What's the doctor going to do? Doctor's going to give him a purple pill. It's going to give him either Axid, which is a H2 blocker for indigestion, or it's going to give him a little purple pill, which is a proton pump inhibitor for indigestion, either of which would cause impotence. So it's going to go to the doctor, get his aspirin a day, phone call, doctor, get indigestion script, get the other pill, now he's got impotence, and his wife's going to say, boy, ever since I sent you to go see that doctor, you've been cheating on me. It's not easy out there. So one place to look is really at the person's medications. And it can start so innocently, just a simple routine visit, that you start some maybe a cholesterol-lowering medication, and before you know it, there's no interest in the relationship. Now, for women, the equivalent of this, of course, as you can see, is she has fibroids, she goes to the doctor, and this fibroid medication kills her sex drive. Lupron is a drug that's commonly given to shrink fibroids and also to treat prostate cancer. And it totally wipes out the sex drive on either party. You're not male, you're not female, you're just nothing. You don't even have an interest either way. Now, the other thing that can happen when a woman goes to see her OBGYN is to do a pap smear, and a pap smear might show precancerous cells. Precancerous means not cancerous, by the way. And she'll say, well, doctor, what are they? What are they? He says, well, it's from human papilloma wart virus. And you got that from one of your sex partners that you had sex with before you met your husband. She says, oh, my God, I'm carrying this into my relationship. Now, what the doctor fails to tell her is that most people have human papilloma wart virus. It's a human virus. Humans simply have it. And the other thing that they don't tell women is if you increase your B vitamins and the nutritional value of your diet, it will resolve. But that's another story for another time. Today, what we're concerned with is what's planted in this lady's mind by her doctor is that her sexual activities prior to meeting up with her husband are the cause of this abnormal pap smear. The abnormal pap smear, of course, being totally harmless because the condition, of course, is not cancerous, precancerous, totally harmless. And so with each procedure, each cryotherapy, each visit to the doctor, this is reinforced, and her relationship is, of course, eroded. The next area that really destroys relationships is cancer screening. This is a toughie. Being a caring partner becomes transmuted or transformed into being a good jailer. Getting your partner to comply with murderous, ineffective, and often unnecessary therapies. So this is how it goes. 90% of melanomas, 90% of breast cancer, and 50% of colon cancer that is diagnosed positive by biopsy are conditions that, if left untreated, would not shorten the patient's lifetime. But what happens? The woman goes and gets a mammogram screening, and her husband says, oh, it's great, I care about my wife, I'm glad she's getting this done, you know, we're just very happy to get this checked out. And she gets a mammogram, they say it's abnormal, she gets a biopsy, the biopsy is read as cancer, and there's a 90% chance she's one of those ladies who doesn't really have it. It's a lot of false positives. And so the doctor says, and we're all us doctors are taught to say this, well, Mr. Jones, we sure want Mrs. Jones to be around for a long time. Now, if the husband expresses doubt about the doctor's therapy or diagnosis, it becomes his expression that he does not want his wife to be around. So subject has changed from, will this therapy help my wife? How will this therapy affect our lives together? To, don't you care about your partner? And so there's no discussion then. It's totally circumvented the discussion about will the therapy work. And so the whole act of questioning the doctor's therapy becomes translated by the doctor into an act of disloyalty against your partner. The tip-off is when the doctor talks of caring and best possible chance and only hope and best option and strays away from existing evidence, if any, that the therapy is effective. Now, this destroys your relationship in two ways. First, it creates an us-them battle with the doctor and one partner taking a side against the other partner. Because it just could easily be the lady who gets her mammogram and says, you know what, I don't feel like getting a biopsy, I don't want to bother with it. And the husband's like, oh, my God, dear, I want you to do everything. I don't want to lose you to breast cancer. When, of course, no one delivers the punchline, which is the chances of her life being saved by this mammogram are less than 1 in 120,000. In other words, less than being struck by lightning, even if she has a positive cancer reading. So this process robs a couple of their power to objectively consider the evidence and bullies them into agreeing to therapy as a way to prove that they care for each other when the disfiguring or painful therapy will destroy their intimacy with little or no health benefit. So clearly, the decision to refuse therapy would be as accurate or even more beneficial to the health of the affected party than a decision to accept therapy. So by changing the subject to questioning the devotion of the unaffected member, the relationship is weakened. And of course, the second way that it's weakened is when therapy is pursued and the devastating bills show up, the good insurance the couple thought they had, poof, evaporates through some loophole, and they're left with devastating, bankrupting bills and a broken relationship. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your phone calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, another issue is drug addiction. In particular, we'll talk about alcohol, but it could be any drug. Let's talk about alcohol, though. Now, my situation was I was in private practice, and I had a cash practice. My patients didn't work. They didn't earn money. I didn't get paid. So his wife comes in and complains that her husband, who's working every day, is drinking up his whole paycheck and not bringing home any of the money. And so she's not able to pay the bill, and what could she do? How could she find her way out of this awful situation? No, he's not beating her. He's got no other defect. His only thing wrong with his husband is he drinks up his whole paycheck at the Y'all Come Back Saloon. Now, if I was a regular doctor, following what I was taught in medical school, I would tell her, get that man into drug treatment right now. Now, I happen to know that drug treatment takes a full month, number one, mandatory minimum. Two, he would get no paycheck during that month, which means she would not pay her bills at all, so would not solve her problem, put this man in therapy. In fact, it would probably put her out in the street. And three, residential treatment of 1 month takes about 8 tries in order to work to get the person off of alcohol. So basically, she would have to do 8 months of this. So I said, well, that's not going to work. So I said to her, this is, of course, not the standard of care, I said, I'll tell you what, why don't we do this? I said, why don't you take thiamine, 100 milligrams, have him take it every single day, and have him take magnesium oxide, 800 milligrams, every single day, and we'll see how things go. Now, what did I tell her to do? I told her to give this guy the same vitamins I was taught to give in medical school for delirium tremens. Delirium tremens is a condition a person has when they try to quit alcohol. Well, her husband wasn't thinking about quitting alcohol, but she said she could get him to do this much. So she went out and bought these vitamins, which cost all of, it wasn't even $10. I think even today they're not even $10. But she went out and got these. Every day she gave him one of each pill. And so 3 weeks later she called me back and said, thank you so much. He stopped drinking. He's bringing his paycheck home every day. Bills are getting paid. We're just so happy, Dr. Daniels. Now, that was a relationship definitely saved. But as a doctor, I was trained that when you got a person who's an alcoholic and you got a complaining spouse, it's time for talking. It's time to refer them to the alcohol treatment program. It's time to get her tied up in meetings where she can't handle her household responsibilities to children and grandchildren. Just wipe the whole family out. But now, identifying it as simply a nutritional deficiency, correcting a nutritional deficiency, guy's no longer using alcohol, happy family. But again, had they gotten the standard of care, they would have been devastated, totally wiped out. Another example is undiagnosed illness, a really undiagnosed malnutrition, I guess you could call it. A woman came to my office, and she said, Dr. Daniels, I have to kill my husband. I've thought about it, and the only thing that's going to work is murdering him, and I just have got to do this. I just figured I'd stop by and let you know in case you had any bright ideas about how I could do this. I'm like, oh, my God. So, of course, again, if I had handled this according to the standard of care, the thing to do would have been to call 911, have the police come to my office, haul this paying patient away in handcuffs, destroy her relationship with her husband, everything, just a total mess, financially wipe them out, and no help to me either. So she told me she had to kill her husband. So, of course, I asked her the urgent question. Well, do you have any plans? A weapon in mind? No, I don't have a weapon in mind, but I just got to do this. What else is, is he doing anything else? How long have you been married? Seven years. It's probably not the first thing he's ever done wrong. No, he's done a lot of bad things, doctor, a lot of bad things. I said, But in the past 3 weeks or so, is there anything he's done that he hasn't done before? No, nothing he hasn't done before. I said, Well, I'll tell you what, I think you need to take this vitamin pill, and I think you need to drink more water, and I think you need to do some enemas, have a few more bowel movements. She says, well, what's that got to do with him? That miserable, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I said, well, he's not here, so I really can't treat him, but you are here, so I can do this. So why don't you do this? We'll see you back, and I would try to make a guess of how much danger this guy was in, and see you back anywhere from 3 to 7 days. And so I thought back in like 4 days. So the first question is not how she's doing, because that's not important. How's her husband doing? I said, well, how's your husband doing? And she'd say, he's doing great, doctor. There's nothing wrong with that guy. I think I'll keep him. Now, again, standard medical therapy, would have got the police involved, domestic violence squad involved, been some handcuffs, all kinds of stuff. But simply recognizing that, you know, this lady's married to this guy. He hasn't done anything different in the past 2 or 3 weeks. Obviously, the problem is her. And so what's different about her? Well, probably what's different about her is that, you know, she's got a little bit of malnutrition going on. And so we corrected that, and right back on, things are right back on track. And they stayed married. We've got 10 years of follow-up on that. They did just very nicely. And so what's the solution here? The solution is, as a couple walking into the medical encounter, you have to absolutely place your relationship first. So the two of you have got to get together and decide that there will be no display disagreement in front of the doctor. One person is going to speak, and the other can only either agree with what the first person said or ask questions, and that's it. Because if there's any disagreement displayed in front of the doctor will pounce on it and say, aha, I and one of the partners agree against you, who stand alone, therefore our two votes outweigh you, and you are going to submit to this therapy, or you're going to stand down and not interfere while I save this life. And so you don't even want to get that started. And so if you separate out to the different roles, that helps. Next thing to help going into the doctor is realizing, wait a minute, the two of us are together, we're a couple. Prior to this doctor visit, there was no reason for us to have difficulties. We're not going to allow anything said at this doctor visit to cause any difficulties. Now, remember, your doctor has an 89% error rate. So if your doctor tells you, say if you're a woman, that you have a sexually transmitted disease and your husband gave it to you, it's really about an 89% chance that he's wrong, either because the test is a falsely positive test, 7% of all tests are positive, or two, which might not actually have a condition. Number two, the condition you might have that you have may have nothing to do with your husband. It may be related to your diet. It may be related to an antibiotic you got a few weeks back. There's all kinds of possibilities. So you need to decide that if you have a disagreement with your spouse, you're not going to base it on anything the doctor says. That's extremely, extremely important because, again, we doctors are trained to create suspicion and to create a dividing type situation. Next, as I mentioned, the doctor is going to count his opinion as one vote, giving him a clear majority when, in fact, the doctor has no vote. It's not his body and it's not his money, so the doctor really should have no vote in your deciding what you're going to do or not going to do. And also, in the event the speaking party commits to anything the other person disagrees to, it can always be settled later, out of earshot of the doctor. This is important. And noncompliance is okay. Compliance is okay. After all, whatever the doctor is about to recommend has an 89% chance of being false. So how can any member of the couple pin their self-image to coercing or making their partner comply? So I usually recommend that whoever the sick person is calls the shots. I mean, the final decision as to, are we going to do something, not do something, do half what the doctor says, none of what he says. Well, it doesn't matter. Whatever the decision is, I think it's reasonable for the sick person to make that decision. But that's my opinion. If you're a couple, the two of you can decide how you want to do that, how you want to allocate those decisions. Like in my family, for example, my husband says it's the health decision, I make it. I don't care. So I make the decision, even if it pertains to him. That's fine. And every couple is going to decide differently, and that's the point. The point is to have a system of deciding that does not include the doctor. That includes just the two of you. That's really important. Next is have a budget. That's really important. Know how much you can spend before you become so financially strapped that it interferes with your relationship and your pleasure. And that's key. And also refuse to accept any therapies unless you get a guaranteed price in writing. And that's from the doctor, from whoever. And that means you will not pay for any complications, unforeseen circumstances, extra tests, et cetera, anything. You make it really clear, just like you would get a quote for an expensive item in writing. Someone submits a bid on a house, you know, you get it in writing. because a lot of times these medical interventions end up costing about that much. Now, it's important to agree between the two of you that you will not commit to anything that costs money at a doctor's visit, just a consultation. Don't let the doctor get you in his office and scooch down the hall for a $10,000 MRI. Now that non-invasive x-rays like MRIs can cost $10,000, this is really important. So you want to do that. So have a budget. No financial decisions made in the doctor's office in front of the doctor. You guys get to go have a powwow. If it's in the parking lot in your car or just drive home, think about it for a couple of days, whatever it is, but not in front of the doctor. Because if there is any disagreement, that gives the doctor an opening salvo to either get one partner of the couple to legally override the other, for the doctor to say he observed that there is disagreement, for the doctor to say he thinks that the one partner is very uncaring. So, and believe it or not, these things are used legally to coerce compliance. And short of that, to bully compliance. So you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Got about 20 minutes left, so if people have any questions, they can click on the question bar, and I'd be happy to answer them. All right. The next thing is make a wish list between the two of you of things you could do that would be fun, things that cost $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, and I know it's hard to think of, but $100,000. Why should you do this? This is very important. Actually, it's a lot of fun, too. Sit down and brainstorm things you guys do together that you're really going to love that cost anywhere from $1,000 to $100,000. Now, next thing you need to ask yourself, if you were going to spend that amount of money and really enjoy it together, how would you spend it? This way, when the doctor or billing gives you a firm number of how much a test or therapy will cost, you can look at the stuff on your fun list. If you get an estimate of $20,000, for example, look at the $20,000 item on your fun list and ask yourself if you would rather do that together or do what the doctor has recommended. Don't let having insurance sway you. Most people who go bankrupt due to health bills have insurance. So realistically, there's a good chance you will end up with the bill. You might as well start with that in mind. So make a list of things you enjoy doing together, walking, hiking, playing cards, couples, dancing, whatever. And whatever therapy the doctor is suggesting, ask him, how will this affect our favorite activity? How will this affect our sex life? Will this make us wealthier? Will my husband make better business decisions? If the doctor cannot say yes to any of these questions, skip the therapy. Now, if the person is ill, wants to skip an appointment, skip a medication dose, so on, support that. And make it a fun occasion. Give them a reward. Love, acceptance, kindness create more healing than any drug or therapy known to man. So make it clear to your partner that you ain't the police and he ain't no criminal. Very, very important when facing a medical establishment that really has a lot of controls in place. The Madison Avenue Marketing Department has really fine-tuned this. And so you really have to have your game plan together, or the game plan of the doctor, the hospital, the whole medical establishment, even the legal system, will shatter your relationship and your financial stability. Now, the other thing we didn't talk about, I like to talk about children. Now, children are very, very important because a lot of times the parent's decision or attempt to make decision about therapies for their children can destroy the family, and can destroy their finances. It can destroy the child's health, destroy the parents' relationship, and destroy their finances. Now, I never understood when I was in medical school the mechanism whereby having a sick child destroyed a relationship or create a divorce. Because, of course, I grew up in a family where, you know, we had two. I had two siblings who were imperfect. They're premature, they're mentally retarded, and there was no difficulty, no problems, no marital issues. Why? Probably because my parents were told, take these kids home from the hospital. They won't live long. If they do live, they'll never walk. If they walk, they'll never talk. If they talk, they'll never, you know, you get the gist of it. So once they took the kids home from the hospital, my parents never looked back, never went to another single medical doctor visit with the kids, nothing. Just raised the two retarded children as just part of the family. And so there's all the six kids, and two of us were retarded, and that was like just the way it was, no problem. But what really devastates parents who have children that have medical needs is the stressful issue where every time a medical decision comes up, it's presented to them as, if you don't do what the doctors say, then you don't really care about this child. If you don't do what the doctor says, then you're not good parents. And that's very stressful when the parents have serious misgivings about the effectiveness of the therapy. It's very stressful when the parents say yes, 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 again and again and again. It's more money, more money, more money, and the kid never gets better. So this is a huge, huge burden. So just as in adult medicine and pediatric medicine, 11%, probably even less than that, of all therapies recommended by the doctor are even going to be a benefit to the child. And so it's difficult. How do you enter into this medical encounter in such a way as to be able to make decisions on behalf of your child? Now, if your child can walk and talk, you have to establish with your child that you, the parents, decide that he has no vote in front of the doctor. The two of you can discuss it later, and he can ask questions in front of the doctor, but he absolutely cannot express a yes-no vote. And also he's not to disagree with you in front of the doctor. And you'll find the doctor will try to get your child to express an interest in therapy, even if you refuse. Then it can become an action for child court, child protective, child neglect, and so on. So that's important. I'll give you an example. This really happened. My niece was 13 years old, and she was at school, and she was walking down the stairs, and she broke her ankle, tripped and broke her ankle. Now, my brother, thank God, had excellent insurance, which means that it was between him and his insurance. There's no opening or operation for the school to interfere. Okay, so he takes her to the emergency room that evening. They get an x-ray, which shows clearly the bone is broken. And they get referred to the orthopedic surgeon for Monday, because I guess it was a Friday. My brother, though, got a copy of the x-ray, brought the x-ray to me, and says, well, what's going on? I said, well, bone is broken, that's true. However, all the growth plates are intact. So this bone break is not going to affect her growth, whatever. I said, furthermore, I forget which bone it was she broke, whether it's the tibia or the fibula. I said, this is not a break that's going to affect her growth. In fact, if you want to, you could put it into a stiff soft cast or splint. But definitely not a case for surgery here. So I go to the orthopedic surgeon on Monday. The surgeon advises a surgery, ORIF, as they call it. Cut her open, put the bone in place, and use pins to screw it in and put a cast over that. So my brother felt that that was a bit much. And so he questioned the doctor. The doctor was very upset at being questioned, and my brother refused the therapy. The doctor then said, well, you don't want her to have one leg 4 inches shorter than the other, do you? My brother stood firm and refused. The doctor then turned to my niece and said, do you want to have one leg 4 inches shorter than the other? Do you really want to go along with what your father said? And my brother said, not that she said, my father said no. And that was it. That was her total contribution to the visit. Well, they ended up getting a cast, only did not get the surgery. It's 9 years later. And she did not have the surgery, and both legs are equal length. Now, had that encounter, had his wife been present and expressed a dissenting opinion, had the child expressed a dissenting opinion, there would have been an opportunity for the physician to get governmental agencies involved and compel the surgery to happen. Now, that could have escalated, like I said, into a real disaster and destroyed the whole family. And family with children, it's also better to have one person, doesn't matter who, make all the health decisions for children. One person, guys can flip a coin, whatever. And that one person is free to seek the input of the other parent, but that person has the final say. Why? Because the doctors are trained to consult the other parent and play one off against the other to get very expensive therapies done that never would have been done had one person had the authority. And so that's really important. Of course, you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies, so powerful they could make antibiotics obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. And as always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, the most tragic of pediatric occurrences that can destroy families is the ear infection. I know, Dr. Daniels, an ear infection, come on. And I would not have believed it, except I tried, as a doctor, I got sucked into this. And, you know, I gracefully extracted myself, but the most tragic pediatric occurrence that can destroy families is the ear infection in a female child under the age of 3. The ear infection that is treated with antibiotics causes a yeast infection, and it looks identical to, because the kid doesn't always have a cheesy white discharge. It can have just a clear discharge that's very itchy. And so here you have this 2.5-year-old, 2-year-old, who's digging at her groin and squirming in her seat. And because this is one of the major signs of sexual molestation that teachers are trained to look for. And so since the child can't speak up and deny that anything happened, an investigation proceeds. Accusations are lodged, tummies are destroyed. Children are subjected to pelvic exams, which are worse than the molestation that, of course, never occurred. And it's absolutely awful. It's absolutely awful. Now, when this happened in my medical practice, the child has had antibiotics. What I didn't know was that the child's also been going to another doctor and gotten antibiotics. So the mother brings the child in and says, you know, I think my child has been molested. And so, of course, I have to, you know, undress the child and take a look. And so I take a look, and I realize that this is most likely a yeast infection. And I reassure the mother that no evidence of molestation here. Everything looks fine, and we can just treat this yeast infection. And this is, you know, this could potentially get really out of hand. In this particular case, it almost did, but, you know, thank God it didn't, and the poor kid wasn't traumatized as bad as she could have been. So in a child under 5 with antibiotics, the best thing is not to treat ear infections in a child under 5 with antibiotics. And in my free report, Natural Remedy is so powerful that it could make antibiotics obsolete. You have the formula for treating antibiotics without, ear infections without antibiotics. And so it can really devastate a family in terms of pediatric care and refusing care, which, again, 89% of the time is going to be either harmful or ineffective. And having the authority to do that and doing that in a way that not only protects the health of the child, but protects the relationship and the integrity of the family as well. So bottom line with relationship issues in medicine is that the medical care you, your spouse, or your child receives, I should say the interaction with the healthcare system, can totally destroy your relationship by, one, running out of bills that you are not aware your insurance company will not cover. So that's one way it destroys the family and the relationship, because then now you have financial difficulties, bankruptcy, and again, the number one cause for divorces. And you might say, well, you know, we're pretty wealthy. We earn $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year. And it really doesn't matter. These health bills can just get out of hand very, very quickly. So it can destroy relationships financially. Next, it can destroy relationships emotionally. And by that I mean, once you interact with the healthcare system, whether you're a good spouse or a good parent is redefined as whether or not you comply with medical therapy. And so that act of questioning medical therapy, that act of deciding to skip the experience, gets the relationship cast as an abnormal relationship. It gets the one party pitted against the other and defined as us against them, the doctor plus one person against the dissenting party who's against the therapy. And so it becomes, instead of a decision about does the therapy make sense, it becomes a decision about are you a caring spouse? And so that's the emotional devastation that happens to the relationship. And then finally, the therapeutic destruction, which is the direct action of the drugs themselves or the mutilating surgery that can destroy a relationship. I want so that's it for the relationship issue. If people have questions, I'll answer them. But I want to mention that my book, The Lethal Dose, Why Your Doctor Is Prescribing It, it will be available on Kindle in approximately 24 hours, which is absolutely, totally exciting. My plan is to make these radio shows available as Kindle books. Now, each book, what I do is I add more to it. There's always new things I think of after the show and the things I could add. And so I put all those things in the book. And so even though you may have heard the radio shows, the books are in more detail and cover more things. So I'll be sending out an email letting people know where the book is on Kindle and how to get it. Now, I did not get to put any of my comic strips in this book because of my logistical, technical limitations. But I'm getting better at that. And the next book, which should be out in another month or so, should have comics in them. And as I get better at this, I should be able to get the books out, you know, quicker and quicker and quicker. So that's very, 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 very exciting. And I think that's about it. Unless people have a question, you can hit your little question button. I'd be happy to answer that. And I just want to say, since we do have a few more minutes, as far as relationships go, you need to really understand that your relationship is absolutely, totally, and completely private. When I say private, I mean that your relationship, if you and your partner agree to it, that's really all that's necessary. It does not require the approval or agreement of prying eyes like a doctor or a nurse or some other authority figure. Because relationships are very, very private things, and that's what makes them part of what makes them so special. So a big part of protecting your relationship from the doctor is keeping your relationship private. And not even giving a doctor the impression that he has any input into that. Now, I'd hate to recommend leaving your spouse home, but it's a good idea to leave your spouse home because then you can always tell your doctor, oh, my gosh, I have to talk to my spouse. I have to think this over. I can't make this decision without talking to my spouse. Whereas if your spouse is there, then you don't have that out, and it gives you a little less wiggle room. And again, you need to realize that there's an 89% chance that whatever the doctor's going to say, it's going to be of no medical benefit, whatever. So playing the odds, if you're a gambling man, you can just realize that chances are that the recommended therapy is not going to be a benefit. So what you have hanging in the balance is not a critical yes decision here. What you have hanging in the balance is another Madison Avenue hype-filled offer, which is fine. I mean, it's okay to make offers, but you need to always preserve your personal power and your ability to say Not now. I don't think so. Save that for the next guy. Or however, you know, you decide to respond to that. Now, next week's topic is an interesting topic. Next week's topic is how your creativity can save your life. As many of you know, I've been doing this research into how many people are murdered each year by the medical industrial complex, which, by the way, rivals the kill power of our forces in Iraq. And I've come to the observation or the conclusion that literally your creativity can save your life, can actually save you from becoming a victim of the medical industrial complex. And the lack of creativity can doom you to a very miserable experience that may culminate in torture and even death. So next week, tune in to same time, same channel, how your creativity can save your life. That's actually a very serious title, and I will talk about that. We'll talk about creativity, how it can save your life, and also how you can cultivate your creativity. That's an important thing to do, too. Okay, well, there being no further questions, that's the end of today's show, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you so much for listening.
Make believe.